This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. I want to thank Claude Julien and Shannon Goldman for stopping by during Hour 1. Apologies for the technical problems, which I'm sure was like some bug on this old Tyline box that I have, which I love, by the way. I'm going to get all geeky on you. I know that Tyline boxes have improved since, but I've got one of the old ones. It's so good. And it's been with me since the old MVSW days, and I really don't want it to die. And I really hope that what we had in the first hour isn't a week at what is to come, or a wink, rather, at what is to come with my glorious old Tyline box that I've had seemingly forever. You know that piece of technology that you have that you never want to part with? And it's still fine. It's still good. I don't need the shiny new toy. Well, that's my Tyline box for me. I've had it since forever. Done so many shows on this thing. Don't want it to go anywhere. So hopefully that was just a little blip on the radar. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Doug Armstrong's going to stop by. There's a few things to talk to Doug about. One, shepherding Team Canada through a couple of different tournaments. The Four Nations tournament, where he'll be the general manager, and also the Olympics as well. Four Nations face-off, and also the Olympics. And also, we should talk to Doug. Well, we should talk to him about the GM's meetings. Well, he's part of, the executive committee, and he's in Florida right now. We're going to be joined by Elliot here in a couple of moments to talk about the GM's meetings. He's in Florida. But also, we'll park a little bit of time and talk to Doug about the St. Louis Blues, who aren't out of this one, right? Even though you can make the argument why they might not be able to get there, considering Nashville is tucked away at that one spot. The only spot available is number two. That's currently being held by, the defending Stanley Cup champion Vegas Golden Knights. Although I'm sure it would be very delicious to a lot of people if Vegas, and we've seen them a couple of years ago with injuries, you know, fall out of the playoff picture. I'm sure it would be delicious for a lot of people to see something similar happen this time around with the St. Louis Blues, who have won four games. And you know what? Sometimes the best move you make is the one you didn't make, and hanging on to Pavel Buchnevich looks really good right now for the St. Louis Blues. 3 points last night. St. Louis beats the Anaheim Ducks, and in the process eliminates them from playoff contention. They join Chicago and San Jose. To Florida we go. This hour will be dominated by the Sunshine State. Doug Armstrong at the bottom of the hour, and right now, sunning by the pool, I'm not sure, is the one and only Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. How's the weather? How's the sand? How's the sun? How are the waves, Elliot Friedman?
Well, I would say I'm not standing by the pool. I'm standing overlooking the pool. So that's your right answer. Yeah, the meetings just broke up about half an hour ago for today, and I believe golf is on the agenda for the managers. But, today, just to give you an idea, there were a lot of breakout groups today. Basically what happens on Sunday, Colin Campbell meets with the senior groups of GMs. That's about six guys. It's Yzerman, Lamoriello, Ken Holland, Doug Armstrong, Kevin Cheveldayoff. Yeah, I think I'm missing one more guy. And they kind of set the agenda. But one thing that happens is on the morning, they do their breakout groups, which is like four groups of eight, I think. And then they kind of discuss what they want to discuss, and they bring it to the big table tomorrow. And it sounds like if there's anything here that might gain traction based on what we heard today after it was over, Jeff, is that there definitely is a willingness to have a larger conversation about whether or not puck over glass should be subject to video review. Now, I should say for the record, I am in favor of that. I think that should be reviewed because it's just such a quick call and it's such an important call. Yep. Now, one of the things they discussed, Jeff, was do you use it to take a penalty down or is it also to call a penalty? Like, one of the things you have to realize here, and this came up in the 3-on-3 overtime conversation, is that they don't want any more whistles in the game. They don't want to slow down the game at all. So everything that they consider is with that in mind. So I think one of the things they've talked about with this puck over glass potential review is, well, do they do it only to take down a penalty that's been improperly called, or do they use it to call a penalty? So, like I said, it's conceptual after today. and and we'll see where it goes tomorrow. But that clearly is one thing that has gained some steam today. It doesn't sound like there's much appetite to change overtime. Department of Player Safety presented today. I haven't officially gotten any comment on that yet, but it doesn't sound like it turned into like WWE Survivor Series where people squared off against each other and only one person right. was left standing. I don't think it turned into that. But they did present today, and I'm just looking for to see some exact clarification on it. And just a couple of other NHL things I just want to mention. I did briefly have a chance to ask Kevin Cheveldayoff if they had an update on Gabriel Vilardi. He said they really didn't, except they are hoping that they are still going under the impression that he'll be able to return, but he didn't know the timeline or the exact situation. And, you know, Kent Hughes just said today that they still don't have an idea yet of when Marty St. Louis is going to return. We all obviously wish him and his family the best. And also, you know, David Reinbacher, the number one pick, just joined Laval this week, and he's going to practice all week, and, you know, they're hoping he can play by this weekend. So that's some of the other stuff that's kind of floating around here.
That's great. Can't wait to see David Reinbacher playing in North America. There's a few things here, so I want to pull out a couple. And there's a number of reasons why I will never be a general manager, nor should I be a general manager in the NHL. but hearing you talk about puck over glass, and I think you've heard me laugh about this before, it really, and whenever it happens, I still howl. And maybe you're the same way. During that discussion, if I were a manager, what I would probably put forward as far as a penalty for puck over glass is any player that points at the puck going over the glass. I find it endlessly humorous the way every time the puck goes over the glass, everyone on the team that didn't throw the puck over the glass points at it right away. It's like, okay, thanks very much. We know where the puck is and where the puck is gone. We don't need you to point at it. So that would be my contribution to that conversation, which is why, Elliot, I will never be a general manager, amongst other reasons, in the National Hockey League. But to the Department of Player Safety, like we talked about this on the podcast, to me, if I'm George Parros, I'm walking in, I'm doing my presentation, and if there's anybody that wants to criticize, well, that's fine, but correct us if we're wrong here. It's the teams that sort of set the note or the timber or, you know, the standard for how they want the game both officiated, so it's a Stephen Walkham thing, and also how they want the Department of Player Safety to behave. We've seen NHL scenarios where, you know, Dave Brown cross-checks Thomas Sandstrom and it's 15 games, or Dale Hunter hits Pierre Turgeon after a goal and it's 21 games. Like, we've seen some, you know, high-level suspensions before. That's all dependent on what the teams want. Like, if you're George Parros, you not walk in here and say, well, you're free to criticize, and that's fine. Just tell me how you want us to do our jobs. Is it that easy, Elliot?
A little bit. Like, I do think there's truth to that. I just think that in a lot of ways, if people get upset, whether they be teams or players or fans, it's, you know, inconsistency. And, you know, generally, I've said this before, and I know there's a lot of people who disagree with me, but I do think there, if you really want to look for it, you can find it. I think there is a lot more consistency in the Department of Player Safety and how they suspend people than people are willing to admit. I think if you look through a lot of things, you can find common threads. Maybe not exact, but you find common threads. However, there are a couple that come up that are different. And the other thing, too, that definitely matters, Jeff, is where they happen. And, you know, for example, with Riley in Toronto or the Perron one with Ottawa, like, I think, you know, just, you know, those happen on Saturday nights. They're bigger markets. You know, I think that leads to some kind of conversation about it. You know, this year we've seen some challenges to them on appeals that we've never seen before. And generally they've all stood. I think they actually have all stood to this point. But, you know, I think while that's true, I think also too, like, officiating, it's a fast game and it's impossible to do it perfectly. But again, your point, I think what drives people crazy is some of the inconsistency. And I just think that people want to see if they can limit the inconsistency as much as they possibly can. But like I said, I don't think there were any fireworks this morning. And one manager joked with me that Bettman was standing right there looking to see who was ready to start some.
Let me pick up on that point about officiating. I don't think you and I have talked about this or made this point before, but I'm curious if you think that there's something there. I know everybody grouses about officiating and the consistency between one crew and another crew and one game and another game. And one of the things, Elliot, that I always come back to is, A, the game is faster than ever. That's true. And because of that, we've seen a lot of older officials who can't keep up anymore, and they've subsequently retired. And there's been a lot of officiating brain trust that has left the game because of it. Like, essentially what I'm saying is there's been a lot of experience that has left the game now because older officials just can't keep up. And it's more of a young person's game now to officiate. And you know when it's that quick and you've only got 25 games under your belt. And maybe we saw this, you brought this up with Wes McCauley and John Tortorella. Is McCauley there to protect the call of a younger official? Yeah, maybe. Yep. Maybe we'll never know. Maybe we'll find out one day. What I look at right now is, is the NHL, when it comes to officials, kind of going through a new growing pain? There's been a lot of senior officials that have left the game because they can't keep up. There's a lot more younger officials. I don't want to say that they're fast-tracked, but there's a lot of new officials in the game right now that don't have that experience anymore, and we're seeing the growing pains because of it. Do you think that's a fair comment?
I think there's some truth to that. I really haven't spent a lot of time like asking about it, but I think it's fair. I mean, there's no question that they're trying to find more former players like Corey Sivrat, who and others who played the game, so they feel that they can have a bit more of a feel for it. I think one of the things that, if you ask people what their biggest frustrations are, is that there's not a lot of conversation, that the they feel the officials are kind of instructed not to talk to them. And I will tell you, I heard from one referee this morning who've heard us talk about this last week, who said it's kind of tough to talk sometimes when, you know, every word you hear is something that's anatomically impossible. So, like, there has to be a willingness to work on both sides. So, I do think that, the one thing is, one thing that's really happened in sports a lot, Jeff, is when we were young or even before us, sometimes it happened in basketball too. Some of the officials were just as famous as some of the players, and the leagues decided they didn't want that anymore. And so I think it built a bit of a wall, and sometimes the relationship between both breaks down. But I think your overall hypothesis is reasonably fair. I just think that, like I said, I think every fan base, like the Canucks fans, they didn't like the way that game was officiated the other night against Washington. Yep. The Oilers fans didn't like that way the game was officiated the other night against Colorado. Like, that's always going to happen. You're always going to have that. I don't know how you can't get away from it. But one thing I really liked the other night was, I thought the call before the goal, I thought DiGiuseppe should have won that icing. And, people can argue with me. Yeah. Like, Ron disagreed. He didn't think that was right. But I thought he should have won. But, Ryan Gibbons goes over to Rick Tocchet before the third period, and he says, look, I mucked that one up. And I think people respect that, but I think, I think the other thing has to go the other way, too, is that I think everybody's trying to do the best job they can. And there's always going to be inconsistencies. You got to make sure it doesn't prevent you from going at your proper goal.
How much around Florida, because you've been there for over a day now, and all the managers have already met, and you mentioned they're breaking up for golf right now. How much of the I'm always interested in the chatter, not necessarily, the what's on the agenda and what we're talking about, but I'm interested in the chatter and how much of the chatter, either in building, out of building, whispers on the street, in the saloon, at the restaurant, revolve around Utah and Atlanta right now. How much are people talking about it?
I think they're, I don't know, like a lot of these teams right now are really focused on their games. Like, like you can see some of these guys, they're the guys who are right around the playoffs or their teams aren't as doing as well as they would like. You can see it. I will say this, like the calmest guy here, considering what's been happening with his team lately is Lou Lamoriello. Like you would never think the Islanders are struggling and walking the line here because he always looks calm and always looks relaxed. So a lot of the other guys are not like that. I would say this. I think the Arizona thing is a popular topic of conversation, but Bill Armstrong makes it very clear that he's not going to discuss it. And it's very clear from all my work in it last week that the people who are most connected to it, they want no part of it. And they really don't want to talk about it. So I think there's a little bit of talk about Arizona and what could happen there. And I definitely think there is a feeling that if they don't get this sorted out, as we talked about, Jeff, there could be very well be a move here. But I don't hear a lot about Atlanta yet. I think there's too much these guys are focusing on with their teams to think too much about that. It's not immediate. If they knew there was an expansion draft on the horizon, I think you'd see this group talk about it a lot more.
I was going to say, because all of a sudden that affects all these teams and who they can protect and who they're going to lose and what type of deals they can cut to make sure they can keep who they want and what it's going to cost them. One of the other things that I talked about in hour one, and I'll pick up this conversation at the bottom of the hour. Doug Armstrong is going to stop by, the GM of the St. Louis Blues. If we can pry him away from golf, apparently, as you mentioned, everyone's broken up for golf right now. I don't know if the St. Louis Blues can do this, but they are certainly making it spicy. They've won four games in a row. They're 4 points out of a wild card spot. We all know Vegas' situation. I'm sure there are plenty of players, or maybe not players, but plenty of managers, and certainly plenty of fans who like to cheer against the Vegas Golden Knights for some of the more obvious reasons. I don't know if St. Louis can get there. They're making it fun right now. Are they deep enough? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but we've seen them run hot on a hot goaltender before. Pavel Buchnevich looks fantastic. They took care of Anaheim last night, eliminated them from playoff contention. What do you make of the St. Louis Blues right now, Frege?
You know, I'll tell you one thing that was really interesting about Doug Armstrong this morning. He was in his scrum and Engels was there. And, you know, one of the things he's talking about, he's now been named as the general manager for Team Canada through the Olympic cycle. And they were talking about the state of Canadian goaltending. And he said, I wasn't in this scrum, but Engels told me he said it. He said, if you go back and you look at the Stanley Cup in recent years, every team that won the Cup, except for one, won it with a Canadian goaltender. And the change there is Tampa Bay. Now, some of those guys aren't playing anymore. Holtby is retired. Although Matt Murray is trying to make his way back, but the Kemper is still around, and his guy Binnington is Aiden Hill, and his guy Binnington has had a hell of a year, and that brings me to the answer to your question. Like watching Binnington lately, he's played really well, really well.
Oh yeah,
and like the odds aren't there. Their math isn't great, as I like to say. But the one thing that gives you the chance to do this is goaltending. And Binnington's the guy who's giving them a chance.
We'll see where St. Louis goes. A couple of more things here. Wayne Simmonds officially calls it a career, signs the one-day contract with the Philadelphia Flyers. Was talking to Claude Julien before he came on and, you know, talked about how they tried to get him in Montreal before he signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, Julien, you know, always wanted to coach Wayne Simmonds. I'm sure there's a lot of coaches that wanted to coach Wayne Simmonds. He's a great story for junior players. You know, he went through two OHL drafts before, you know, our colleague Mike Fuda drafted him with Owen Sound and later was part of the group that drafted him in the Los Angeles Kings. Do you have a thought on the career of Wayne Simmonds? I mean, for some, even going into junior hockey was a long shot, and he earned every inch of ice, the old cliche that he had in the NHL. Just a thought or two on the career of Wayne Simmonds now that he officially calls it a career.
Well, I mean, like a lot of people, I really love watching him play. Just a guy, I think you said it right. Like he grinded and battled for every inch of ice he got and he earned. I'm really curious to see what his post-playing career is going to look like. I've heard rumors at times that maybe something would be available for him in Pittsburgh with in their organization. Obviously, he has got a good relationship with Kyle Dubas or any other organization, whether it be Philly or Toronto or whoever it could be. Like, you know, he would be a good add to any organization he went to. I'll say this. He was low-key a really funny quote. He used to say things like, I remember seeing him at the BioSteel camp once, and he had this huge tub. I can't remember what it was in his stall. And they were telling me, and he was telling me too, that he was not a guy that could put on weight very easily, that he used to have to eat so much just to keep up his weight. And I remember thinking, I wish that that was my problem. Like, I have the exact reverse problem. And the other thing that he told a story about once that was hilarious is, like, how Jacob Voracek was, like, the worst roommate because he was so messy. And, like, that was one thing about Simmons was, not only did we all like the way he played, but he was low-key really funny. Like, when he would come in, when we were playing Philly or whoever they were playing, and we'd go into the room and he'd talk, he was just a hilarious guy to talk to. Just hilarious.
So tonight on Rogers Monday Night Hockey, pregame 8 o'clock Eastern, puck drops just after 8:30 in Calgary. Washington Capitals face off against the Calgary Flames. Later in the evening, the Buffalo Sabres in Seattle to face off against the Kraken. I'm going to ask you about Shane Wright in a second here, but both the Capitals and the Buffalo Sabres in action tonight. When you talk about the math looking good, I'm not one that likes to hand out free wins based on games in hand, but Washington, believe it or not, kind of looks good here. The Buffalo Sabres with a little bit of a setback against the Detroit Red Wings on the weekend. They look to regroup tonight against Seattle. Essentially, it's a way for me to set up. How do you make sense of what's happening in the East right now around the wild card? We'll see two of the teams that are in contention, Washington and Buffalo. But how do you sort this out in your mind?
Well, the thing is tonight, too, is that, you know, they win and they're in. Like, they get that win tonight, and they are in the playoffs. The other thing I really like about Washington, too, is that when you look at regulation wins, which is the first tiebreaker, if they win tonight, they're going to have 27, and that'll be more than anybody around them except for the Devils, although, you know, the Devils are 6 points back. The Devils have 27 also. So they're putting themselves not only in position to be in the playoff, but to have a great tiebreaker set up if they win in regulation, I should say. So that's big for them. Honestly, and we've talked about this a bit, Jeff, like they're minus 30. Their goal differential is minus 30. You do not make the playoffs with a minus 30 goal differential in this league. Like, in the salary cap era, that is unheard of.
Yes.
It has not happened. But they're battling. I give them credit. Like, they got embarrassed in Edmonton. They grinded through Seattle. They grinded through Vancouver. It'll be interesting. They're getting Dustin Wolf tonight. Although I saw Eric Francis wrote today that Ryan Husker said that possibly Markstrom could play this weekend. But I give them a lot of credit. Like, they, by all statistical revelation, they should be nowhere near where they are. And they're finding ways to grind out, like, 2-1 victories, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1. The one thing that's really funny here, Jeff, is that for a long time, the Capitals, if you wanted to play goal for goal, when they had Ovi, so they would be glad to play that game against you. They can't do that anymore. They got to win the opposite way.
But Ovi's still scoring, remarkably enough, like all these 2-1 games.
Yeah.
Ovechkin's still finding the back of the net. Meanwhile, the Buffalo Sabres here plodding along. You always cross your fingers, certainly for that fan base and for a lot of those players. So they're in action against Seattle. Now, I want to ask you about Seattle and one thing specifically. The name Yuri Slafkovsky will always get brought up around Shane Wright because that was the top spot in that draft in Montreal. And Ken Hughes went with Slafkovsky, obviously, over Shane Wright, who fell to fourth as Seattle Kraken. Given where Seattle is at right now, and they've just lost a pair of games too, if you're the Seattle Kraken, and I talked about this last week, is it the right time now to call up Shane Wright, give him a run, and then send him back to Coachella Valley for the playoff run in the American Hockey League. Like, I'm just trying to figure, like, how could you argue against it at this point? I mean, this is such a key piece to your future. You know, up the gut, it's going to be Beniers and Wright for the next 10 years or so. Do you not, if you're Seattle, look at calling Shane Wright up sooner than later here to get him some more NHL reps?
You know, I've thought about this because I heard you talk about this last week, and I certainly understand your theory and hypothesis. You know what this looks to me as, Jeff, and I could be wrong. Like, things can always change. But as we sit here today on Monday, no, it's not that either. I'm not actually convinced it's that. I think, although, you know what, like, that could, I could be a factor, but I wonder if it's one of those things where you're like, we do it after we're officially eliminated.
So it doesn't look like you're throwing in your towel until you turn into Anaheim, Chicago, San Jose?
That's what I wonder. I wonder if they're like, look, like, we just think this is the best team we have right now. And, like, this is a super patient GM, probably the most patient GM in the NHL.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not going to be buckled to pressure or anything like that. He's going to do what he thinks is right. So part of me wonders is, we think this is our best team, we go with it, and if we get knocked out, then Shane Wright comes up. But that's not based on anyone telling me that. It is simply based on my personal thinking of the situation.
Well, they have 68 points, and Vegas has 79. So we shall see. Or do we say maybe the St. Louis Blues grab that? Well, one of the things you mentioned on the podcast that is probably worth a quick thought or two or a follow-up, tough weekend for the Minnesota Wild. You know, we talk about teams making that late push and trying to get there, and St. Louis is there. This was a tough one for the Minnesota Wild for each.
Yeah, you know, they were gotten close. They could put some pressure on Vegas a bit, and then they really had a rough weekend, and now Eriksson-Ek is hurt, and I saw where Michael Russo reported this morning that he's not going to join the team at the beginning of their trip in California. So it's a bad weekend on the ice, and it's a bad weekend off it. Don't these people understand, Jeff, that we just want playoff races? Like, all those teams, like, in the East, we're getting, like, the snail's run to the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yeah.
But in the West, like, hey, like, Minnesota, hey, like, St. Louis, we need you to make this interesting. No falling back now.
Let's go. Spice it up. Real quick, we'll end on this one. Anaheim Ducks officially eliminated from playoff contention by losing to St. Louis yesterday. Listen, I don't think anyone expected, even though they had that nice run to start the season, and it was fun, and, you know, a lot of names started to distinguish themselves, and we know where this whole thing is headed for the Anaheim Ducks. But now that they're officially eliminated, you have a look back and a thought. Certainly we'll think about, you know, the Cutter Gauthier, Jamie Drysdale situation, but anything stand out for you from Anaheim this year?
Well, I think the things that stand out is that Leo Carlson's a player. Like, that's their biggest win of the year, is that the guy they took second, and they had options there. They could have taken Fantilli, they could have taken Carlson, but the guy they took is going to be a player. And I think that's a big win for the organization. And I think they deserve credit for handling it in a very unique way that seems to have worked. Like, the one thing, you know, the one thing you can see with the Ducks is you can see the future. You can see the players they have. They have him. You know, they have Medjukov. They have a lot of young D. They have McTavish up front.
Yeah.
I still think the Zegras thing, we'll see where that goes between now and next season, how that's all going to play out. But you see the talent, Jeff.
Right.
I just think the question is, how long is the drive? Like, is this Anaheim drive, is it going to be some adult dropping off their kid, driving to a track and taking out all their frustrations by putting pedal to the metal and going around in circles as fast as they can? Or is this one of those idiots that goes into the left passing lane and drives 60 for 200 kilometers? Like, that's what we... You can tell I had this happen to me last week, by the way. But
I was going to say, speaking of experience.
Yeah, but that's for me the question. Like, you see the future. I just wonder when the future becomes the present.
Okay, give us the rest of the day for Elliot Friedman in Florida.
You know, we've got to tape a couple hits. I've got another interview this afternoon, and You know what? Then I'm going to relax a little bit. I already did my morning workout. By the way, Jeff, did you finish the 2000? Did you and TJ finish the 2000 push-ups in February? Did you get that done?
That's all done, and I did it with Brody, my youngest son. And we're now up to 100 a day. Now he wanted to continue. How about you?
Wow. Well, I do. David Amber taught me a good push-up routine. I'm doing 3 times 30 every day. So that I did them this morning.
Nice.
I had my workout this morning, and I'm taking out the Sportsnet crew for dinner tonight. Although well, the big surprise is I didn't tell Angles he's paying. We'll see how that goes.
See how that one works out. Mr. Bill, over to you, Eric Engels. Okay, you be good. Enjoy your dinner. And yes, when the bill comes, make sure to tie your shoelaces. Okay, you be well. We'll check in tomorrow.
Take care, buddy. Be well.